My name is Richard Lamparski, and if you're a music buff, you probably know that's Brahms' first symphony. And if you're a radio fan, you probably know that my guest today will be Mr. Milo Bolton, because we're going to talk about a radio and a TV show by the name of We the People. Now, who was it, Mr. Bolton, that used to boom that, We the People Speak? Was that you?
Yeah, I'll have to plead guilty with that for about 6 years anyway. The show originally went on the air, and I think that Phillips H. Lord was the first MC of We the People. And then they gave it to them. Then Gabriel Heater had it for a couple of years.
Eddie Dowling had it, too.
Well, I followed Eddie Dowling. After Gabriel Heater came a series of MCs, Eddie Guest for a few weeks, Burgess Meredith for a few weeks, and then Eddie Dowling. And
that Edgar Guest, the poet?
Yeah, uh-huh.
I don't remember him on radio. Well, I remember him in the Hearst papers.
Well, he was only on We the People for about four weeks.
You remember that poem about him?
No.
I'd rather flunk my Wasserman test than read a poem by Edgar Guest.
I never heard that one. Very good. But I followed Eddie Dowling as the MC of We the People.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, the man that created the show was Phillips H. Lord, who created a lot of them. Gangbusters, Counter Spy, nearly all.
Seth Parker, I think, is the one he
Seth
started
Parker
out with.
Seth Parker was... Oh, there's a beautiful story about Seth Parker. You know, he was supposed to be such a religious man.
Deeply religious.
Oh, yes, Seth Parker. And, of course, the people knew that Phillips H. Lord was, the Seth Parker. And he had a cast of actors, so they were rehearsing the show at NBC, one of the studios there. And they used to have what we called a fishbowl up there, where the tours would come through, and the Page Boys would say, "Well, now here's Seth Parker. That's Phil. Or here's Seth Parker in rehearsal. You very famous radio show." And Phillips H. Lord was highly annoyed with his whole cast. They just hadn't delivered anything. It was still in rehearsal, and he started raising hell with him, and I mean hell with a capital H. And calling them everything in the world, and I mean using that really vile language. And somebody stepped up to him and whispered to him, he says, "Somebody up in the fishbowl was crowded with people." And he looked up there and saw all these people, knew that they'd listened to Seth Parker as a very religious. And he turned around, he says, "And furthermore," he says, "I'm going to tell Mr. Lord that as soon as he comes into the studio."
I had heard that story because I read it in Mary Jane Higbee's new book.
Oh, really?
Did you read that?
No, I haven't.
It's
I hear it's very good.
Tune in tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Delightful book. It has a lot of those radio bloopers in them.
Yeah, well, that wasn't a blooper, but it was pretty fast thinking on his part. But he had created so many of these top-flight radio shows. He was the Mark Goodson of 20 years ago, the Goodson-Todman, that have created all these... Stop the Music and What's My Line and so many shows that you see on TV now. Nearly all those game shows are Mark Goodson, Bill Todman shows. Well, anyway, Phillips H. Lord wandered into the offices of Young and Rubicam, one of the biggest advertising agencies in the world. And I think Sig Norman was the president of the company, the chairman of the board at the time. He had an appointment with him, walked in, and he said, "You know," he says, "I've got three words that's going to cost you millions of dollars." He says, "I got them," and he says, "You're going to buy them, and it's going to cost you plenty." He says, Sig says, "Well, what are they?" He says, "We the people speak." And he says, "We the people." He says, the first three words of the preamble of the Constitution. And he says, "We're going to get people all over the country, and we'll have somebody interview them." He says, "I'll interview them. I'll start the show interviewing them, and we'll get stories about people all over the country. And they'll come to the radio. We'll bring them into New York, and they will tell their own personal story. And it doesn't make any difference What the story is, as long as it's a current, heartwarming story, a story of bravery, a story of cowardice, a story of any human interest story.
Heartwarming was the key word.
Yeah, heartwarming. Yeah, that was, yeah. Yeah, it sure was. No, I did We the People Speak, for 6 years. Danny Seymour, who is now in charge of all television and radio at J. Walter Thompson, was my announcer at the time. And he would come on and give the name of the sponsor and your neighborhood dealer, present We the People. And then I would give a build-up as to the show, actually a billboard of what was going to be on the show. I'd say, tonight you will hear a story of a woman who has undergone 2,000 bombing raids from the island of Malta. You will hear the story of a woman who had to make the fateful decision whether she should save her husband or her child from drowning. You will hear this, that, and so many other stories. Stories of warmth, stories of heartwarming interest, stories of humor, stories of tragedy. Stories you hear only when We the People Speak.
Why am I laughing?
Boy, that's bringing them back. Oh, man, that's going back over 20 years. I left that show in 1947.
It's funny how funny it sounds now.
Yeah, real corny. Yeah.
Now, did it seem corny to you when you were doing it?
No, not because at the time, see, we were using, it was a war service program. The Gulf Oil Company had only one customer, it was Uncle Sam, but they wanted to keep their name before the public in every way possible, and they...
What we now call the image.
Yes, that's right, the proper image, yeah. And so they took over We the People, which had been sponsored before that, I think, by General Mills or General Foods. I always get them mixed up, whichever had the Sanka coffee and those things. Which one is it? Well, it doesn't matter. But anyway, Gulf was always very prestige conscious, still are, big name. They sponsored the Will Rogers Show for many years, and they had the Screen Actors Guild when they had all of the stars in Hollywood, and they deviated from their usual method of hiring all stars on there, and they threw this MC job open for auditioning, and it came down to between me and Walter Houston, and Walter wanted to live on the coast and do it out there. And they, Gulf and Y&R wanted the show to come from New York. And again, I suppose it was a slight difference in the salary of Walter Houston's and mine. I wound up with the show. But that was good. But we had the current hero of the week much of the time on the show. We knew when we had lost the Lexington down in the South Seas, weeks before the news was ever released. And we had the senior medical order officer of the Lex on, and a lot of the stories that we had to sit on top of until the War Department released them because of security purposes. And at the same time, we had on a lot of human interest stories that were not related to the war, and of course we had on practically all of the big diplomats and the generals and the high brass that came over to this country during the war. We had Lord Halifax, I know, was one, General Mark Clark. We hit headlines with Mark Clark with what he said. We hit headlines in every newspaper in the country. He had just come back from Austria. Yeah, I couldn't make him think whether it was Austria or Hungary. But Austria, he'd been stationed in Vienna. This was after the war. And he wanted to tell what the Russians were doing over there. And the director that we had at that time, Lindsay McCary, I think his name was, he's dead now. But he and the staff didn't want General Clark to tell what was going on, what the Russians were doing, what we had to prepare for, what their aims and ambitions were. And... with the result that what the staff had written for General Mark Clark to say was about as wishy-washy a thing that you could get any eighth grade a youngster with no experience whatever would be just about what he would say, and Mark Clark was furious.
No, it's not a wishy-washy man.
Oh, I should say he isn't. And I was sitting out in the audience. We were doing the show from the old Maxine Elliott Theater, and I was sitting out there. This is prior to broadcast, of course, that afternoon when we were going through the show and getting straightened out for time, music, and all that. And I was sitting out there, and she was watching him. We could see in the control room where this conference was going on. She says, "Mark's getting angry." I said, "Uh-oh." She says, "He's getting very angry." She says, "I don't know what's going on, but he's about ready to walk out of that meeting." And sure enough, he did. He came out, and he was steaming. And he was a real angry man. And, mister, there's nothing that can get angrier than an angry general, unless it's an angry admiral. But Mark Clark was furious, saying that they're trying to make him rationalize everything that he's saying. And then they've given him an argument that he's editorializing. He says, "I'm not editorializing." He says, "Damn it," he says, "I'm telling exactly what the Russians are doing over there." He says, "I'm telling the truth." And he says, "They won't let me tell it." And he says, "Here's the stuff I want to say right here." And he had his own script there. And I said, "General Clark," he said, I'm ready. "I'm ready to walk out on the whole thing." And he turned to me and said, "What would happen if I walked out of here right now and refused to go on?" And I said, "Well, General," I said, "you've been advertised all over the country that you're going to appear on We the People tonight." And I said, "There'd probably be a lot of new faces around here tomorrow if you didn't go on." And he kind of scowled and he said, Well, all right, I'll go on, but I don't want to say all this wishy-washy stuff." And I said to him, "General Clark, when this show goes on the air, and you see that on the air sign, and after I introduce you, there's nobody on this network that is going to take General Mark Clark off the air for anything he wants to say." He cut loose. Oh, brother, how he cut loose. We were on the front page of every newspaper in the country. It was the first time that Mark Clark had cut loose and told exactly the truth of what was going on in Austria at the time. And, of course, it came to pass, Austria and Hungary, that what the Russians had done over there. But that was one that created a pretty tense moment there for a while. And Mrs. Clark told me afterwards, said, "I think that he would have walked out of the studio if you hadn't told him that he could go on and say what he wanted to." Of course, the studio was ready to explode. I mean, the control room. But I just sat there and grinned at him because politically we were on opposite sides of the fence a great deal from some of the boys there, and they didn't want the truth to be known. Yeah. He told about
that. Yeah, well, of course, that was at a time, too, when a military hero was a completely accepted hero in this country.
Oh, yeah.
No one ever challenged that a general might not be a wonderful man.
That's right. Well, of course, this was after the war was over, and...
Well, still, I think those feelings of patriotism were running very strongly.
Oh, yes. Yes, it was. Yes, but there was, at that time, there was a lot of censorship going on, and what the true story was, and we cut it loose. General Mark Clark cut it loose. That's one of the big headlines that we had.
I want to ask you some more questions about We the People and some of the other radio shows you work, but I've got a couple of things here I want to play from an album put out by Nostalgia Records. They have offices in New Rochelle, and they sent me an album which I've played before in this program called 90 Themes, like old times from radio of yesteryear. And I'll play two together so I don't have to interrupt you again, then we'll play two later in the program. These are themes from Mary Noble, Backstage Wife, and another one from It Pays to Be Ignorant, one of the funniest radio shows.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that was Lulu McConnell. Remember Lulu McConnell on It Pays to Be Ignorant?
George Shelton is still living. I understand he's quite ill. President
About Kennedy. 3 years ago, and I can't think of the man's name, it was the other man who was on that, was living out on Long Island. I understand he is dead. Amity. Bill Long Island, and I wrote him a letter, and he wrote back and said he couldn't come into town, but he told me that George Shelton was very ill.
Yeah, he has.
And this was about three and a half years ago. Lulu McConnell, of course, has been dead.
Lulu McConnell, George Shelton, and the fellow lived down here around Eatontown, New Jersey.
Was it Joe Howard?
Howard and Shelton. Howard, yeah.
That's right.
Of Howard and Shelton, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Actually, I think he owned that show, Joe Howard.
Did he? I didn't know that.
I think he did.
That was on for years. It was very funny.
It was a funny show.
Yeah.
And they had this Englishman, Max something. McCall?
Yeah, and he had one running gag.
Harry McNaughton. Harry McNaughton, yeah.
Right.
I had this... Well, we're back to Lulu.
Yeah. Now. Well, anyway, listen, tell me, you mentioned Mark Goodson. Tell the people, if you would, the people who were speaking, about Mark Goodson on We the People. I thought that was cute.
Well, as anybody that listened to the show know, we used a lot of actors on the show to, in certain spots of the commercial and lots of times to set the scene, dramatization to set the scene for the interview with the guest that followed. But Mark was always used on the show for a certain quality that he had in one line that the company used during the war about gasoline powers the attack. And was always a build-up with a fanfare, and Mark would stand there with his finger on the script. And he always had a whole script. He only had one line. He would always carry this full script. And he'd have his finger right on the place, and there'd be the fanfare coming up, and dead to stop, and he'd get the cue from the control room, and he'd, gasoline powers the attack, and he'd twist his script in a funny little twist, and we used to get the biggest kick out of gasoline powers the attack with Mark Goodson. Well, he sure has powered himself into several million dollars with that.
When people have a one-liner like that, do then they go home?
Sure.
They do?
Sure. They're through. I think at the time, I think a half-hour show at that time, I think commercial scale on it was around, oh gosh, I don't know, I'd say around $60, $75. And he'd come in for the dress rehearsal, and when this part of his show was over, sometimes it'd be at the beginning of the show, sometimes the end, he'd put his coat on and go home, wait for his check for $75 or whatever it was.
Well, I'd do that today.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't? Oh, we had one. Brad Barker. Brad Barker was probably the greatest animal imitator in the world. And he had a competitor, a little fellow by the name of Bean. Bean? I'm not sure. But anyway, this story concerned Brad Barker. We needed some animal imitations for a dog actor, whatever it was. And during dress rehearsal, went through the show, and Brad Barker was doing his animal imitations. And right after the dress rehearsal, we were waiting around for cuts and changes and whatnot, and the director decided to put in another voice, that he needed another voice in a certain scene. And he said to Brad, he says, look, he says, you know, you get another fee. He says, you get $70 for this. And he says, now you can pick up another $70. Just do this one voice for me. Brad Barker looked at the director and says, I'm sorry, no, I don't do people anymore. Oh, boy. What a business.
Tell me the story about that you told me before we began recording. You told me to remind you to tell it again when you were playing a straight bit about...
Oh, this was... Oh,
end of World War One, the factory.
It was one of those little dramatic shows. And as I recall, it was on the Blue Network. You see, NBC used to have it in the Red Network and the Blue Network. Blue Network was usually their sustaining shows. They didn't pay as much as the commercials.
And the Justice Department made them sell it.
Yes, yeah, they were broken up by the government. And now it's now known as the American Broadcasting Company. But at that time... it was the Blue Network, and is also used as NBC's sort of editorial page. Any idea they wanted to put over, any story, any certain bit of not necessary political propaganda, but what they wanted to put over, they used the Blue Network for an editorial page. Well, anyway, lots of their shows were on NBC, dramatic shows, especially on Sunday. And they'd have anywhere from a half hour to hour shows, and they would have these scripts sent in. And this one, as I recall, the title was Jim's Girl. And the scene was laid right after World War One, and I was a returning hero to this small town, and my mother had been living in poverty, and the villain of the piece, he said, well, he says, of course, I kept your mother alive all this time. I mean, I didn't foreclose on her home, though she had borrowed a lot of money on it. And I said, well, you took over my father's factory. My father had a very going business before I went overseas. And he says, oh, no, no. He says, that factory was no good. He says, it wasn't worth anything. And I said, wait a minute. And I had a piece of business where a desk drawer was to come over. And I said, here's a letter from the government of the United States about that factory. Here, the United States government wants to know if this factory is in a position to manufacture munitions for the U.S. Army. But what came out of Milo Bolton at that time was, oh, I mean, after when we get on the air, these things only happen when you're on the air. The United States government wants to know if this factory is in a position to manufacture musicians for the U.S. Army. We had little Joe Stopak as the orchestra leader there, and I thought he was going to fall right off his stool.
Could it be heard over the air?
Oh, laughing? Sure. This was live.
Yeah, no, but I mean, they're laughing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I imagine that a lot of muffled laughter went over the air.
They were so fussy about those things, and now, really, you can get by with nearly anything.
Yeah.
I was watching Helen Gurley Brown one day a couple of months ago, and she was talking to somebody, and he accused her of not liking women or something, or wishing she was a man. And she said, oh, to the contrary. She said, I adore being a woman. She said, I like the idea that a man will support me, that I can have a baby, that I can menstruate. Well, I nearly fell off the chair. This is a syndicated tape show. Went out all over the country, you know.
How much time do you got?
We've got about 10 more minutes.
Oh, well. Have
you got another story for me?
Yeah, there was one. This happened on a show called Pretty Kitty Kelly. Pretty Kitty
Eileen
Kelly.
Blackburn?
Arlene Blackburn.
Yeah, I have a green pin. I saved, you know, these lapel pins.
Well, she may have told
it. Said, listen. I had never met her. It said, I listened to Pretty Kitty Kelly.
Oh,
it was green with a big shamrock.
Yeah, yeah.
Never met her.
Well, they used to, the sponsor was a nationwide bread manufacturing company. And I used to do the short commercial in New York that was in the New York area. And there would be these spots all over the country saying that, in Denver, Colorado, 4,452 women out of 4,770 choose this one particular bread as the best bread. And there would be several pickups from all over the country. It was expensive to do, but apparently it paid off. And the return cue was to come back from, I believe, San Francisco. We were broadcasting in New York. The return cue was to come back. And it said, yes, indeedy. Even if your husband does your shopping for you, tell him to always ask for the best in bread. Well,
that's the way it was supposed to be.
That's the way it was supposed to be, but the announcer out there got the R's in the wrong place. I'll let you figure it out.
We have flooded with complaint letters and cards.
I never saw them. Used to get some crank letters and a lot of things on We the People. But of course, a lot of that stuff would be delivered to me. But I was supposed to pick up with after this, ask for the best in bread. And the entire cast with Nat Crowley, Bud Collier, and the rest of them laying on the floor screaming with laughter, just rolling and trying to hold. And I'm supposed to go on with the closing paragraph of a closing commercial on the thing. How I got through it, I'll never know.
Matt Crowley loves those things.
Oh,
he was here once, and he told a story on the air that was hysterically funny. Everyone was rolling onto the floor, but you could never, ever put it on the air. When we were finished, I said that was, and there was a lady and another man with him. We were doing the Buck Rogers. And I said, you know, that was wonderful, but we're going to have to record another 3 minutes, Mr. Crowley, because you can't possibly use that. You know, they say you can get by with a lot of things today.
Wasn't he the original Buck Rogers?
Yes, he was. Yeah.
John's other wife. Well, I worked with him on John's Other Wife. It was my first regular job in radio. And the original John's Other Wife, the original John on John's Other Wife, was Handley Stafford, who left here and went with the Baby Snooks.
Baby Snooks, he was Daddy.
He was Daddy Snooks on the Fanny Bryce show.
Yeah.
And Matt Crowley stepped into that role. Oh, Handley Stafford only had it for a few weeks or maybe a few months. And Matt did it for years. And then afterwards, After Matt, there was a series of them. There was Louis Van Ruten did it for a while. What's Eller and Kilgallen's husband's name?
Oh, Dick...
Dick Colmar. He did it for a while. Spencer Bentley did it for a while. Oh, they had lots of Johns on Johns, by the way.
Let me play two other openings for you, then I'll come back and I want to ask you about the TV thing. The two I have are a hit parade. I did a hit parade show about a year ago, and I didn't have this recording. It's the wonderful opening. I think they had a great opening. And we'll follow that with Mr. First Nighter, one of my personal favorites.
Oh, yeah.
So there we have two more openings. What was We the People like on TV? Because I never saw it. How did you do that?
Well, I didn't do it on the simulcast.
Uh-huh.
I left the show when it was still radio, but it bombed.
But it was on about 4 years, wasn't it?
Well, no, not on TV. It was only on TV, I would say, about a year and a half or maybe 2 years. But that was before the age of teleprompters, and the people would write the stuff out in cards.
Cue cards?
Cue cards that these people would read. And they would... Well, they would stutter along, and maybe some of it would be blacked out, or maybe the guy holding the cue cards would skip a card and put it over. And then they were quite obviously reading, like, for instance, "Well, now, Mr. Announcer, as I told you a few minutes," that sort of thing. And it didn't work. Whereas if they had cut some the people loose, then tell their own stories. Anybody can tell their own story. But they never did that.
Well, I was going to ask you. Now, you had people. They were not professionals.
No,
coming
never
in from all around the country.
Seldom ever any.
Didn't that panic them when you gave them a script?
Well, we rehearsed them so thoroughly that they could do it automatically.
Even when they knew they were on live?
Oh,
they didn't
sure.
Panic at the last minute?
Oh, sometimes you'd have somebody panic, but not very often. Had Lou the
Sorry Honker. To hear that.
once in a while they did. Lou the Honker, it was Lou Diamond. He's probably the most famous Marine Master Sergeant that ever lived. He's dead now, too, but Marines all over the country know about Lou the Honker, Lou Diamond. And he was telling a story. He was down there with the 1st Marine Division in Guadalcanal, and he got sent back. The action was still on down there, but he was sent back to the States, and... I think invalided home, and he was getting along in years. I think he's the only Marine non-commissioned officer that was allowed to wear a goatee, a mustache and a goatee. And I asked him, a lot of this stuff was in script, and I says, "Lou," I says, "what's this I hear about you don't salute anybody under the rank of colonel?" "There's a damn lie. I don't salute anybody." I kind of raised my eyebrows because you couldn't even say damn on the air or anything like that. And then a little while later, I said, "Well, Lou," I said, "are you feeling all right now? I know you're in with it at home from..." "Oh, sure." He had one of those real foghorn voices, and he said, "Oh, sure." He says, "I'm all right." He says, "The only reason that they sent me back from Guadalcanal is I couldn't get my beer." And he says, "You know," he says, "the trouble that some of these officers are now," he says, "well," he says, "for instance," and he says, "damn it," he says, "why did they put that well in there?" He says, "I'd like to say what I really think. Damn it, anyway, let's say, what the hell?" But he was quite a character.
I'm sorry, Lou the Honker isn't with us anymore. I'd like to have him on.
Terrific. He was killed in World War I. With the 5th Marine Regiment attached to the 2nd Division. He was. Apparently he was in a trench, you know, the 5th and 6th Marines really piled up a record over there with the 2nd Infantry Division. And he apparently got caught in a shell hole and another shell hit and he was buried. He was buried for a long time, and when they dug him out of there, he was given up for dead. They just pulled him off to one side, and that was it. Pretty soon he started to breathe. So he's one Marine that came back to life.
There's my theme, which means I'm going to have to say goodbye, and I'm sorry because I hate to interrupt you, Milo Bolton. We've been talking today with Milo Bolton, who was the host for so many years on a radio and TV show called We the People Speak. And so, as Jack Benny used to say, we're a little late, folks. So thanks for listening. Until next week at the same time, this is Richard Van Parsky. Good night.